We are back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula. Bill Russell is here with me, and we're talking with Danny Coulson. You talk about a concept that I found really intriguing called unk-unk. Now, alliterative it is, pretty it isn't. UNK-UNK. Talk about what unk-unk means, if you would, please.
Well, it's really the idea of you don't know what you don't know. And which
that sounds
which,
trivial, but it ain't.
Oh, it's really not. In a crisis situation, it's not what you do know there or what you can find out that really will cause you problems. It's the unforeseen things that bounce up that really cause you a great deal of problems. And it's a product of the idea of the fog of war, where you have confusion and people excited, people who don't really know how to deal with stress. They go into a scene of a shooting, and it's just everything just gets to be hyper, and you talk about an adrenaline world we live in. But frankly, the really good of us know how to deal with that. And the more that you deal in high threat situations, the more you can deal with the unknown and be prepared to deal with it. And also, I think you're a little better at preparing for eventualities and looking beyond the moment. I think one of the problems we have in our government right now is we don't think about consequences of action. And I think commanders tend to do that too. And if they're not prepared to do with the unk-unks that we
unk-unk, I should say, is the unknown unknown.
Mm-hmm. The unknown unknown, indeed. Take that on the next step, as you do in your book, talking about leaders and how they are able to keep stress manageable.
The best leaders I have had have been the people that keep the stress off of you. I've had other leaders who when headquarters or something really dynamic happens, they become agitated and they put pressure on their people. And the way to really command is take pressure off. And basically, you have to know the structure of your organization. You have to know the types of things your people need and take that pressure away from them. I had a call yesterday from a man named Jim Norman, who was the case agent on the Oklahoma bombing. And he said to me, you took so much pressure off me because you realized that I was completely overwhelmed with the magnitude of this case. And so I brought other agents in. For example, we brought a case agent in to handle every suspect so that one person knew every suspect and not expect one man to know all that. It's just physically, emotionally, intellectually impossible. And that's what a good leader does. He recognizes stress and does something to relieve it, not put more on.
This goes to the management book you're going to write.
Maybe.
You could just take this book and change the title. Sell a few more. There's a notion abroad that you have to generate pressure, that, you know, a good manager, you know, torques people down and they work long hours and they push and push and push and push, which for me has always been a way to generate bad decisions and bad behavior.
Yeah, it is. And again, I'll live and die with this one, that a manager's job is to take pressure off, not put it on. And I would submit to you that most people that want to do that do it because they can't themselves handle the pressure. They're because they're weak and don't understand that you get people. It's like a noodle. You can't push a noodle. You can only pull it. And that's what leadership is all about. Follow me. I'll take the heat. Let's go. And I think there are very few good leaders in the world. I mean, if it's 1%, that's probably a lot. There are very few dynamic leaders that really know how to lead their people.
In this physical domain, you talk 3 or 4 different times about an electrical hum.
Oh, yeah.
Please tell me about that.
Well, I am not a supernatural type of a person.
You don't look like a mystic somehow.
I'm not a mystic, and I can't levitate. But I really do believe that human conflict creates its own energy. And, for example, at the Atlanta prison riot, when I walked into that, I could almost smell the lightning in the air, and it was not lightning, it was just energy. At the Oklahoma bombing and other things I've been to where it's a crisis situation, that the emotion of the people who are there to try to resolve it, the emotion of the people who are causing it, and the emotion of the victims all generates this tremendous amount of adrenaline and energy, and it's almost like it's electrical and you can really feel it. And I think people who have been to those situations, if they'd ever just stop and reflect on it for a moment, would say, yeah, I feel it too. I really do think it's a real thing. Can I put a number on it and equate it to anything? I can't, but I know it's there.
Is that then part of the leader taking some of that pressure and directing that energy?
Absolutely, and you have to learn to make that energy work for you. One way to make it work for you is to use that energy to deplete the energy of the person you're working against. Let him wear himself out with all that energy. And the other thing is to understand that energy will kill you too, and will kill your agents. And in situations where I've had to command major groups of men and women, the first thing I do is send half of them home. I don't need all you guys. You guys go get sleep and come back. I'm going to need you tomorrow. I don't need you today. So a leader has to think what's going to be important tomorrow, not just for the day.
This is leading and management. It's striking. You know, what you're talking about is managing the energy and leading and focusing the energy. We once had a senior executive tell us that, you know, again, headquarters doesn't get it. I can spend as much time as they need. What they don't understand is they only have a finite amount of energy. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is dissipating my energy, doing mm-hmm. all these different kinds of things.
Busybody stuff.
But the real skill is in seeing that energy and then managing it and focusing it and
understanding how it affects you as a leader.
Yeah.
You talk about this energy, and there is just a very keen sense of FBI agents and people in law enforcement across the spectrum must be able to stand a level of tension, of adrenaline, of thrill that other people cannot. Isn't there a temptation to be what you call a cowboy?
Oh, of course. I mean, we're aggressive people, and we have unbelievably big egos, and necessarily so. I like to talk about terrorists who have their inferior people in their own minds, their inadequate personalities. But people that do the kind
in their own minds?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're inadequate people. I completely would argue forever that they're inadequate personalities. Maybe they don't admit it, but subconsciously they know it. But on the other hand, the people that pursue terrorists have big egos. Because what we ask them to do, you can't have a bunch of hand wringers. I mean, you can't
hand
say
hand wringers is not a compliment, is it?
No. That's like being a driver. I mean, you think. I mean, here's what I want you to do. I want you to. You're going to fly in a helicopter, 125 knots. You're going to fast rope off that helicopter without being wired into anything. You're going to drop about 100 feet. You're going to maybe go into the ocean, swim to your objective with a pack of explosives on your back. You're going to have to go into a terrorist compound. Hopefully, they won't shoot you. And then you may have to rescue hostages there, and you have to put an explosive charge on the door. Charge in. Face a man with an AK-47 and try not to kill him, and certainly try not to kill the hostages or get yourself killed. Now let's go. I mean, you don't want a guy that says, oh my gosh, suppose the rope breaks. You want a guy that says, oh, I can do that. I mean, I can do that. You want those. You want a big ego. You want a person that has big confidence, but on the other side of it, doesn't take himself all that seriously. He takes his job very seriously. He knows he's really good, but doesn't act like it.
I had a very keen sense as I was reading through all these thrilling stories that as you talked about the people who were in the counterterror force and the people who against whom they were mm-hmm. pitted, the terrorists, that I was looking at two sides of the same coin.
You are. And if those terrorists could be anything, they'd be HRT operators. And that is one of the things that gives us a tremendous advantage in negotiations.
Because?
They would like to be us. And we have a commonality that we can talk about. I mean, I've looked face-to-face at terrorists and negotiated with them. And if they could be anything, they'd be a policeman, they'd be a Delta operator, or a Navy SEAL.
So what went wrong?
Inadequate personalities. They'd like to be that, but they don't think they have it in them to do it.
That's also the danger, though, of what you do. I mean, there are a lot. The part of the challenge is not to identify and create this whole universe that is good guys, bad guys, and the citizens that you're responsible for protecting.
Well, they call that the John Wayne syndrome. Mm-hmm. And again, that gets back to talking to the people. Being a part of the public and not be so isolated. One of the tendencies that we had at the academy is that we trained every day. We did this very intensive training. We actually had people killed in training, one man killed in training. It's very
insensitive training.
And very difficult things they ask us to do. And it tends to be this, we just keep getting closer and closer to closer, and you forget that there's another world out there. And I would constantly send my guys out to do real world average cop stuff just to arrest a common criminal. To understand that, I'm really an FBI agent. I'm not a commando, and that is a dangerous syndrome to get into, the commando syndrome, because we're cops. We're not commandos, and you're absolutely right.
Well, and it's even challenging. It's challenging for police too. The idea of spending all day every day in a threatening environment. I mean, you go to work and you never know when somebody's going to shoot at you, mm-hmm. and at some point that has to wear on your on your psyche, but it also is, you know, would tend to, unless there's a strong counterforce, would tend to isolate you, bring make your world smaller and smaller and smaller, and ultimately you're going to behave badly if that continues.
You're
going to
act like the Los Angeles Police Department did in the Rodney King thing. And I think that one of the biggest problems for law enforcement occurred when we put cops in police cars. Now, we have to do that because of geography and boundaries and the areas we're asked to cover. But when we got the cops off the streets, not talking to people every day, I was actually chief of police for a while, and that will probably surprise you after I retired. I took on a little department because they were in trouble and needed somebody to come in for a period of time. And I had this thing where we called it a park and walk, where I'd have the cops get out of their cars, park them, and walk around town, talk to everybody. Because they're there to serve and protect, not just protect. And the more they're dealing with the people, the better off. And of course, there's the concept called community policing, which I think goes too far, makes them social workers, but they need to talk to people and broadens their horizons. They're better cops for it. And plus, the people like them. The people adopt them as their cop.
This is Danny Colson. We're going to be back with him in just a moment with a little bit more of the Paula Gordon Show. Please do be with us when we return.